Max Rivers here with Loving Conflict, my new book. This is day six. And we're going through this chapter one, the stages of relationship. And we're going to be talking about the mature relationship to give you a sense of what's going on here. Basically, I'm a marriage mediator, and I teach my clients nonviolent communication, NVC, an embodied form of that. And we have an idea that relationships have three stages. The first stage is the infatuation stage, where your universal human needs find someone who meets the needs of yours that you don't know how to meet. In stage two, which we talked about yesterday, something goes wrong, and what it is that goes wrong is the needs that you don't know how to meet. You've invited a person in who's really good at meeting those needs, which is great during the infatuation stage, and now you have the problem that you're living with someone who's really different than you. And we have a tendency to try to change them to be more like ourselves. Watch the video from yesterday, and I go into great detail about why that doesn't work and what you can do about it. So, stage three, the mature relationship. So we've talked about stage one, the infatuation stage. Stage two, the difference stage, ideally, but more often experienced as the conflict stage. Stage three, the mature relationship, our goal for you. When your relationship moves into stage three, the mature relationship, what you thought you were getting in that first stage of infatuation finally materializes. You chose this person because they delight in meeting those needs that you let languish when you were alone. You've already experienced, during the infatuation stage, how good it felt to be in relationship with your partner, with this particular person, when they exercised their skills in your areas of need. Then, in the difference/conflict stage, you lost touch with that aspect of the relationship due to your mistaken belief that because of your differences, your needs were not going to get met. Which is understandable, but completely wrong. Without those differences, these needs of yours went unmet for years. So you're in this kind of conundrum now, right? Because having somebody as different from you as this person is makes it hard to be with them on the one hand. On the other hand, it's the only way you seem to be able to get these needs met, what I call forbidden and hidden needs, which we'll go into in a couple of chapters. It's the only way you seem to be able to get those special needs met in your life. So you've got this attraction and repulsion going on at the same time. It was only when you got into a relationship with someone who has these differences that your needs stood any chance of getting met. But the infatuation stage is just a sampler. You don't get the full benefit of your choice of complementary partner until you do the next step. Heal your childhood and other wounds, and so release yourself from your own limiting beliefs about what is possible. So let me explain that a little bit. So during the infatuation stage, when you're chemically induced to be in love and have sexual attraction for this person, which is probably an evolutionary thing to keep you together for 18 months to 3 years so that you can have offspring, whether that's your plan or not, it's evolution's plan. During that whole time, you're not critically thinking about this difference or anything. You're just open-heartedly giving, open-mindedly receiving. And the flow causes you to get those needs met. But that doesn't heal the limiting beliefs, which gets kicked off in stage two. It turns out getting those needs met without having to ask for those needs to be met doesn't actually heal the old wounds. What you need to do in order to make it into the mature relationship stage is be able to identify what it is you're needing, even the needs that you have incorrect but understandable beliefs that these needs are either bad needs, like sex, for instance, is often defined as a bad need by some religions, or it's a need that either you're not good enough to get met or for some reason you shouldn't get that need met. So, for instance, I was raised in the 50s as a male, and So I shouldn't get my feeling needs met. That's what I was told. And it was reinforced by parents, television. I was beat up on the playground if I showed them. Teachers indicated that in the way that they treated us, and so on and so forth. And so there are a lot of reasons why we have these limiting beliefs, but they are just limiting beliefs. They're not true. It's not true that sex is a bad thing. It's a natural thing, as natural as eating. And it's not true that because I'm male, I don't have feelings. I have plenty of feelings. I have the full range of human feelings. I may not be allowed to express them in certain cultural settings, but that has nothing to do with my being able to access them and share them freely with people who don't have the same limiting beliefs. Your historic despair about those needs, which went unmet in your past, that's the real roadblock to your happiness. So the problem is not that this person is too different from you. They're exactly the right amount of different from you. The problem is not that these needs are bad or that you can't have them. That's the limiting beliefs. Those are the roadblocks. Unconsciously, the reason for getting into relationship is to finally get these needs that have gone unsatisfied for decades met, and you know this person can do it. It is this unresolved internal dichotomy that caused you to ask for them by judging your partner. So, because you can't have them, you can't just ask. Because you want to have them, you have to ask. So, the unconscious chooses to express that request as a judgment of your partner, which they don't experience a request, they experience as an attack. They attack back, and that's where the same old arguments keep coming from. That's what's led to your dissatisfaction. Now, during the stage of mature relationship, instead of having to wait for the other person to spontaneously offer to meet your needs, you now know how to ask and negotiate as needs organically arise and recede. This is the thing about feelings and needs. They are a perfect currency for dealing with the present moment and for relationship because they change moment to moment. They're the perfect truth for any given moment. You can't just kind of set them and forget them because life isn't like that. Marshall says what causes pain is describing the ever-changing moment in changeless language. So the changeless language is making a rule or an agreement about the way this is supposed to be or about who your partner is or isn't. The great thing about needs is they change with the constantly changing moment. They're always telling the truth, your real truth, and your partner is always telling their real truth if you're doing needs-based negotiations. And then when both of you are speaking the truth, you can have true love. As your internal world changes and flows with events, instead of having to hope your partner notices, you can identify what you are needing and you can express it in a way that feels inviting to your partner because it takes their needs into account as well. And this is another really important point. It's silly, but it's kind of an advanced relationship skill for people to get the message that both parties have to get their needs met simultaneously for it to be a relationship. It's not enough for you to ask or demand what you want. It's not enough for you to even know what it is you want. To be in mature relationship means to be in relationship for your needs and theirs to be in relationship with each other. You end up negotiating a third thing, the us, which is better than what either one of you would have come up with alone. Elise and I experienced that. We kind of were surprised when we first learned NVC to discover that these negotiated, co-created strategies for how both of us could get our needs met actually met both of our needs better than what either one of us would have come up with alone because you've got people with that difference and you're getting the benefit of looking at something from both sides, from two different directions. And it really does make things amazingly better. You end up with way better solutions. We used to say we expected it to be twice as good being in a relationship with two people, and it ends up being 10 times better. Equally important, you've learned to translate your judgments of your partner and of yourself into simple statements about what is true for you, because that's all needs are. Simple truths about you. So we talked yesterday about translating those judgments, which are the relationship busters, and take the second stage into conflict, take your relationship into conflict. We talked yesterday about judgments being the cause of all the conflict and violence in relationship. And once we've taught you through the rest of this book how to translate your judgments, which are really just badly worded requests to get your needs met, according to Marshall, and he turns out to be right from our experience in our relationship and with all of our clients, into simple statements about what it is you're needing, and then needs-based negotiations with your partner about what the two of you are going to do about that together, co-create that together. That's why the mature relationship often begins with a quiet, truthful, needs-based conversation. One person tells their deepest, darkest secret. Listen, the truth is dot, dot, dot. But this time, instead of being expressed as a judgment, the sharing starts with self-responsible vulnerability. Now, what's interesting about, you know, the word intimacy can be broken into the sentence, in to me, you see. Letting people see what's true inside of you creates instant intimacy. And these self-responsible, truthful conversations about needs are exactly that. You're letting the other person actually see what's true for you, even the stuff that you have some feelings about, that you would rather not communicate. And so this is a way of communicating your truth and creating instant intimacy. Perhaps it begins with a character flaw which they believed if anybody knew they had, they would never be loved again. I'm basically an insecure person. Or I'm kind of lazy. Or I'm a cleanaholic. Or whatever. And if their partner is ready for this level of honest sharing, the response is often, as we've witnessed it, yeah, I've always known that about you. I find that kind of endearing. Amazing that the very thing that we have a belief about, this is a need of ours or quality of ours that we should hide. You can't hide it from somebody who you love and who loves you. Remember, during the infatuations period, they were meeting those needs of yours. So they obviously do know what they are. And they enjoy them because they know how to get those needs met. That's what they're here for. So the thing that you're withholding, which blocks the flow of energy and therefore blocks intimacy. You know those couples who sit at restaurants and don't talk with each other? They're doing withholds from each other. From the very person who would delight in hearing that and who loves that part of you, even though you perhaps don't. But eventually the conversation drops down to the need level where the real open-hearted sharing can begin. I've been feeling lonely because I want more connection with you, but I've been afraid to ask for it, so I've been judging you instead. This is likely to elicit the response, I'm so glad to hear that, because I want more closeness with you too, but you always seem so angry with me, I thought you had lost interest in me. You know, this is one of the things that we don't understand about conflict. Conflict sends all kinds of messages. You may just be expressing your frustration, but your partner is reading into it that there's something about them they're not liking. You were okay about accepting it when it was given freely, but the way the second stage switches from conflict into the difference stage is when you actually do the healing and start asking for the needs that you believe are forbidden. That, it turns out, is where the healing happens. And it happens amazingly quickly. In our experience, about two or three requests for a forbidden need, for a need that you feel you don't deserve or that you believe is a bad need, And having your partner, in fact, respond to your verbal request with a yes and meeting that need, the forbidden quality of it begins to recede almost immediately. These needs never completely recede back to being like all the other needs. They always kind of have a little bit of a special charge on them. But when in a mature relationship where you're asking whenever they come up, and when your partner is meeting them freely and excitedly and delightedly, it turns out that that little extra charge on them just makes them feel that much better when your partner does meet them. And so the very thing which we believe is causing the vast majority of relationships to end is actually the thing which makes your relationship so much sweeter and deeper. And when you do this healing process together, this co-healing, because you're doing it in both directions, the bond that it creates is so much stronger than the bond you had during the infatuation period, where this was just kind of being done freely and lightly without it really connecting to the psychic phenomenon that's going on inside of each of you. Then the couples begin unwrapping all of the unopened gifts which have always been there, but which the habitual arguments had kept hidden. Here are some examples of real clients of ours. Names and genders and stuff change to protect our clients. One couple who came to us ready to divorce over whether to put their sick dog down now realized that they both love not only their dog, but each other. He wasn't being cruel, trying to keep the dog alive, as she believed. He was just terrified of being alone, but couldn't say so. And he believed that when the dog died, she would leave him. When she realized how much he loved her, she realized her judgments of him were just her defense against the cruelty of her childhood, which is why she married a doctor so caring that he would even try to save their dog's life. True story. Or the businesswoman who spent all of her free time judging her artist husband's useless, unemployed friends because they were such a bad influence on him, now admits that she is jealous of how happy his art and those friends make him, and how scared she is that she is becoming a drudge. He reminded her how much he valued her ability to create wealth that allowed him to follow his creative nature, and how much he wanted to share his joy with her. I don't know about you, but I feel the energy of that. Feels good. Or the wife who complained constantly to her overworked husband that he never helped with the housework now admits that she misses working and hates the suburbs, and he breathes a sigh of relief because the powerful woman he married is back. These fights that you're having in the conflict stage, what you're fighting about is not really what you're fighting about. It's so ridiculous. It's such a waste of time and such a waste of life and such a waste of love. And it is insoluble at the level of content that you're talking about. Her conversation about that he never helps with the housework has nothing to do. I mean, it's a smokescreen so that she doesn't have to say the things she doesn't believe that she can say and still be loved. If you are having those same old arguments, if you keep fighting and keep having the same fight over and over again, trust me, you are not fighting about the thing you're really fighting about. And it will never end because you can't solve the thing that you need by fighting about something else, particularly just making it judgments, violent attacks of your partner. The vicious cycle of complaint and judgment slows, and the same old arguments finally stop. And then the relationship begins to spin in the opposite direction, and the beneficial cycle begins. In stage three, the mature relationship, instead of seeing your relationship as broken and your partner as the problem, the topic shifts back to the point of the relationship in the first place. Fun and pleasure, love and support, cooperation and teamwork. So, this is what we want for you. We want to offer you a set of tools and skills I mean, the longest I ever worked with a couple is 9 hours. Or you can read the book, or you can watch these videos, but you have all of these options for learning how to do this. It takes me 9 hours at the most to teach the skills that you need in order to be able to stop having those same old arguments and have the mature relationships, quiet, honest, truthful communications and negotiations so that both of you can get your needs met. So what I like to do is to end these half-hour readings with a homework assignment, and I'll pull this one right out of the book. At the end of this chapter, we just finished the stages of relationship chapter one, there's a quiz that you can take to see where you are in the same old argument stages. So, what differences define your relationship? Essentially, what I'm saying is, in order to know what's true about your relationship, you need to know what differences are that you brought in so that you can begin to understand what needs each of you are wanting from the other and what skills you have to offer each other, as well as which needs you believe are forbidden. In the first two sessions with couples, I answer those questions for you. I do these sessions, by the way, in Philadelphia at my home office or over Skype or Facebook Messenger, if you wanted to actually do this work with me. So, what differences define your relationship? Here's your homework. Start a list of the ways you and your partner are different. We have a tendency to focus in the beginning on how we're the same. That's fun and the easy part of the relationship. The important part of the relationship we maintain is how you're different. Add to it over the next few days as you watch how the two of you interact. Knowing the actual differences you're dealing with is the best way to begin shifting the understanding about what is causing your same old arguments. These differences are real. They are the fuel of the passion and the conflict in every relationship. These differences are not going away, and so getting to know what they are is basically understanding what your relationship is really about. Tomorrow, we're going to be starting the chapter on universal human needs. This is the bedrock of NVC and of the teamwork mediation process. These are the beginning of the skills. In the next chapter, we'll get to the heart of all satisfaction, universal human needs. NVC says that these are behind everything we say and everything we do. So it's vital that you understand this essential part of what makes life worth living and what is driving us from the inside out. Tomorrow night, we'll be talking about universal human needs. Spend the next 24 hours noticing what your differences are. It's Max Rivers. Bye-bye.